Into sports.
20 yards out, Hurst to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him. Yeah, no.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
This is News Talk.
Well, hello there. Some technical difficulties, I think it's safe to say. We're having a few moments of radio silence. Apologies about that. We are here. Don't worry. Do not adjust your radio sets. Everything is working at your end. We just had a few issues there. You are very welcome to Tuesday's Off the Ball. It's Joe Malloy with you this evening, where, amongst other things, Tara Sullivan from the Boston Globe will chat Super Bowl 55. Tom Brady, really, in many ways, the sporting story of the world this week, winning his seventh Super Bowl, aged 43. Football show between 9 and 10. Dan McDonnell will be with us, and Andy Mitten as well, at full time between Manchester United and West Ham. And we'll also talk to Armin Katayan. He has been on the show before, really interesting guest. He's the author of that Tiger Woods biography from a few years back, on which the new Tiger Woods documentary is based. You may have seen that documentary doing the rounds. Armin is executive producer of the documentary, so he's on the way at 8 o'clock. Richie McCormack, evening to you.
Howdy, Joe. When you mentioned, and I saw the name Armin Katayan popping up on Twitter earlier on, I was reminded of a very infamous encounter that he had with the WWE owner Vince McMahon about 18 years ago, where they did a sit-down interview about the spate of debts that had blighted pro wrestling, and Vince got very head up with Armin's line of questioning, to so much so that he smacked the notes out of Armin's hand. I presume the interview you're going to have tonight is going to be a little bit more sedate.
It is. 11 Emmys, Armin Katayan, actually. I wonder, did he get one of the Emmys for his Vince McMahon interview?
Could well have done. Could well have done. You got Roddy Piper sacked because of the same incident. That's another story.
53106 is the text number. We're at Off the Ball on Twitter. Do get in touch. Daniel McDonald, hello.
Hi, Joe. I thought Richie was going to say then that Vince McMahon smacked Armin with a chair over his head or something like that.
He wasn't far off. He wasn't far off.
If you watch Undertaker come into the room out of nowhere, you know, I don't know, or something like that.
Wasn't far off. The incident is like, it's silly stuff, really. And part of a string of really awful interviews that McMahon did around the time. There's a similar incident whereby he essentially just gets thick like a six-year-old child would under the line of questioning, and kind of starts doing the equivalent of back to the interviewer, but in a far more, you know, middle-aged, steroid adult man, aggressive style. So yeah, that's Vince for you.
And how much of a spate of debts was this spate of debts at that time?
Oh, huge. Like, there was between the late 90s, I'm going to say around 97, and mid-2000s, up to and including Chris Benoit's murder-suicide, there was an inordinate amount of guys between the ages of 30-odd and 40-odd passing away, mostly because of heart conditions, and the heart conditions were knock-on effects of steroid abuse, and essentially the finger was pointing back at McMahon, who had avoided jail for similar charges in the mid-90s for saying that he was basically a facilitator for steroids for his roster, something which he got off a prison sentence for. But yeah, like the amount of debts, and you know, it's one of these things that obviously needed looking into at the time, was just off the scale. And even still, the death rate of guys and the ages that they do die for being involved in pro wrestling is scary young.
Steroids alive and well, do we suspect, still there?
Still, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Like, it's, I have to be careful how I put this. They do have wellness checks, and they are very much up on drug testing within the WWE. Outside of that, it's still the Wild West. You know, if you are so inclined, you can get around these things as well. So it's something that will never, in that sphere anyway, go away.
Daniel McDonald, you have watched these Tiger Woods documentaries, two-parters.
Yeah, I watched it back to back actually on I think it was a Sunday, and yeah, I mean it was interesting to hear because I didn't read that book at the time, which I actually regret not doing, and it's on the list of meaning to get around to it. And again, with all these things, I feel like you still need to read the book. But it's interesting that the author was like an executive producer, so clearly I was literally going to ask you how true it was to the book, if you know what I mean. Because I don't think the book was very sympathetic at all, really. Whereas I felt that this maybe was it a slightly bit more sympathetic at the end of it. I don't know. You certainly end up having a bit more empathy for Woods, and I don't know if I got the impression that that was the takeaway from the book, or maybe it was just that there was so many little details in the book of Woods' behaviour that maybe it was hard to forget. Whereas maybe in the documentary, okay, I know people haven't seen it, so I'm conscious of that, but obviously it's, you know, it's there's contributions from people who knew him when he was younger, some home video footage of him as a teenager, which almost make you sort of sympathize to some degree with you know, whatever sacrifice Ken with his mad dedication to golf with the help of his parents.
And is that what prompted the empathy?
I think so. I mean, like, have you watched this? I'm trying to think. Have you watched this yet? Or like, I'm trying to think. Do you share the view that I have? If you did, but I think there was a sense of someone who was a product of like a scientific program to make him what he was, like to make him this golf machine. And it does. And of course, listen, it doesn't justify everything. I mean, it definitely doesn't. And like, you know, you sometimes, like, American sport and culture loves the documentary on the sort of the tortured genius, and it almost this has everything with the Masters win at the end of it, and it's almost a sense of like, I don't know, I'm gonna, you know, having watched it with my better half, and even, you know, obviously it's interesting to get maybe a female perspective without going down the road of like gender stereotyping in a horrific, you know, in a very blunt way, but you know what I mean, there's obviously aspects of his story that are pretty shocking to a lot of people, and yet when it comes back to like the glorious sort of the return at the end, there's a degree of sort of, oh well, that's nice that he had that, you know. There was the sense that, and he's maybe with his own kids, he's happier, and he's going to have the type of relationship with them that maybe is a bit more natural than whatever happened. Well, his relationship with his dad was complex, and obviously we've seen the stuff of his son playing golf a couple of weeks ago, which is I don't know, it's an unusual layer to it. But you do feel like someone who basically didn't have a normal life for a long period of time, and as a result, that had an impact on him. And maybe he just had a destructive streak that he wanted to act upon. So you feel some sympathy. Like, I don't know, you tell me, like, what's your sense of it?
Well, I've seen the documentary, the two parts, HBO originally, and I've read the book. The book is way better, as it always is with these things, because it just gives you such a fuller picture of Woods. And that comes up in the conversation with Armin Gatayan later on after 8 o'clock, you know, that, for instance, and we've made this point a few times, so apologies, but one of the lingering aspects of the book is Tiger Woods' casual rudeness to people on a day-to-day yes. basis. That doesn't really make the cut in the documentary. There's no time. When you're trying to cover Tiger Woods and you have 3 hours, 15 minutes, and there's the scale of his golfing achievements, and there's the scale of his downfall, you're really running out of time very quickly. And his childhood is just so extraordinary, and they've got great footage of his childhood as well. And Armin conceded that point, and he does concede it after 8 o'clock. I spoke to him, obviously, already, that stuff had to go. And so you're left with a less complete picture. I get what you mean about the more sympathy. You probably do a bit more sympathy for Woods watching the documentary, and not least because the awfulness of the media is just laid so bare, you know? I mean, that National Enquirer talking head, whatever his name was, I mean, he was pretty despicable.
How many episodes is this? Two episodes?
Just two, yeah. 3 hours, 15 minutes in total. So, like, Yeah.
I think people have become far more tolerant for, you're saying like stuff had to be left out. People have become far more tolerant for the longer form documentary. The Last Dance, I guess, it was the peak of that.
Yeah.
Before that, the OJ Made in America stuff was like excellent. Like that's the, I think, one of the best documentaries I've seen. The breakdown essentially of OJ's entire career. And it's like, I watched this, a completely different genre, but like I watched this recent Frank Zappa documentary put out by Alex Winter, and it's 2 hours and something long, and I just was left thinking it's way too short. And Woods's life and the different areas of his life, the different phases of his life, are almost worthy of documentaries in and of themselves. Yeah. So to capture everything in 3.5 hours, like you say, there is, it's like, even like even with 3.5 hours, it's a very difficult thing to do and to do well.
Oh, big time.
It was like an accelerated Last Dance to some degree, yeah. Because it did have that style of jumping back from 1 year, you know, to the present day, or not a million miles off it, and then going back to whatever, something in his life in 1994. But now that is interesting you say that, like, Joe, and that's even his view, because like it is sometimes with these books, it's the one-off anecdotes that stick with you, you know, like there's this story, you know, this sort of a tale about, you know, an Irish player in days gone by, an unnamed Irish player, like, you know, burning a money in a sort of a distant country in front of some poor people. And it's very hard to move beyond that anecdote, no matter what else you might hear about someone. You know, it is sometimes these one-off tales, like some aspects of, you know, say Roy Keane's time at Ipswich, and you hear little stories of little exchanges he had with certain players, and as much as you know that he's a fascinating character and there's so many more layers to him, and there's stories of like kindness and that, like sometimes it's those little details that you find hard to move beyond, and you wonder, God, am I being suckered into like taking a positive view for, yeah, feeling happy for this person at the end of it? As you said, isn't it the stories of like Tiger being notoriously tight with staff and stuff like that, you know, sort of locker room staff and that type of thing? And
oh yeah,
they are the details that, like, it's harder to defend, you know, but obviously, you know, if you want to be very, you know, glass half full about it, I mean, as you know, like the existence of the golfer, the someone who has to thrive in that sport, it's a very singular world, and a lot of them, like, it comes at the expense of a degree of self-awareness, doesn't it? I mean, like, it's not exactly it's not exactly, you wouldn't necessarily be going to your golf world for the most, with a handful of very notable exceptions, and we have a couple of them that are, you know, hailed from not far from us, but you wouldn't necessarily be going to them for the most rounded worldview debate. But I suppose there's an element of basic decency of a type. But I don't know, like, you watched it, I always knew he was on TV when he was younger, right? I always knew that he was a bit of, but I didn't realize how many times he had been that he'd been on. So like, if you think about it from the age of like, you know, 2, 3, 4, he was used to that. You know, when was his normality?
Yeah, there was none for sure. There was none for sure. So we'll get to that after 8 o'clock with Armin Gitane. There's loads to talk about when it comes to this documentary. By the way, when Dan says Tiger was tight with the staff at tournaments, he means frugal as opposed to great mates altogether. It's a distinction worth making.
Oh yeah, you've got common lingo. It's like you call something a joke now, it actually means it's good. Yeah. Right? You have to be on top of it. Yeah.
One other thing we'll discuss, and I'd be curious if anyone has seen the two documentaries, if they want to text in and give some thoughts, because this has been targeted as salacious by lots of people. I mean, not least Mark Steinberg, Woods' agent, and it does absolutely give a huge amount of real estate to the downfall and to all the events which led to the downfall. And again, maybe when it's 3 hours 15 minutes, to give so much time to the downfall feels excessive, whereas if it was a 6 or 7 parter, the same treatment would have felt a bit more appropriate. So the scandal, if you want to call it that, I mean, my God, the hypocrisy when you think of the behaviour of people all over the world, not least famous athletes in this department, that Woods is like the poster boy for adultery. But the scandal, as it's known, takes up a lot of time, and I think that's one of the reasons people are a bit uncomfortable with the documentary. But we also ask Armin Gitane, like, at what point should this just be left alone? You know, does the man have to keep having it relitigated, re-explored in different ways? Because Armin Gitane was saying, apparently now there's like, there's been the book and there's this HBO series, and now apparently there's a drama being made of it, you know, all based on the book. Ozark. So they're on the way. The people who made Ozark are doing the Tiger Woods drama. They're
in
early discussions. Yeah, I couldn't believe it. I was like, my God, this book is like is never going to stop paying for your kids' education, Armin. It's amazing. But we discussed at what point it should be left alone, you know, and at what point. He's paid his due and doesn't need to be re-examined. At what point does the man's privacy come into it? And look, we're as guilty as that, you know, of that as anyone by talking about it. But especially given that when all this first happened, his kids were just babies. And now we're seeing them at the Masters and they're, you know, into adolescence. And at least with the book, you had to go and buy the book. You had to make the effort to read it. You had to, you work for some of the nuggets, or you get a more nuanced understanding. Whereas when it's a documentary like this, and you just have to hit play and sit there passively and have the man's life laid bare, I don't know. I kind of felt a little bit not so sure about this watching the documentary.
Yeah. Well, it's who's the judge and jury on it. Like, I was listening, it's actually an old one, but that there's a very good The Slow Burn podcast series, and there's a whole series on the Clinton-Lewinsky affair, I guess, and comes down to Clinton's impeachment at the end of it. And effectively, it gets to the stage where in the last couple of days, it's obviously there was other people in the Senate and their own affairs were coming to light. And it came to the point of, well, actually, I mean, listen, there was serious sides to it, but at heart, like, you know, there's a lot of other I'm sure there's a lot of other golfers probably out there and other sportsmen who are probably happy that Tiger's out there. And for some reason, obviously, I know this is an opinion, isn't it, that he felt compelled to do the grand apology on television.
Yeah.
And there's obviously a view that he shouldn't have done that, right?
Yeah.
Some people are sort of would hold that view. Why is he doing that? And I can see that point of view completely. But I mean, I'm guessing the counterpoint for that is that although I don't recall him trading off his family man image too much, really. But I suppose that is often the counterpoint with these things, isn't it? Wasn't that the problem with John Terry's stuff becoming public, that he'd actually, you know, he'd to some degree, I think had he been a father of the year or something, or there's aspects of that which then define public interest. You know, and that's how stuff gets out there. But I think it is a fair point. But it's America. It's the rise and the fall and then the rise again. So it's a key part of it. So that's an attractive part of the story to a lot of people.
Yeah. We should get a move on. The news round on Off the Ball on News Talk is with thanks to Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette made of what matters. Richie, you're kicking off with the news. I hadn't seen this. So Padraig Harrington has COVID.
Yeah, he's withdrawn from this week's Pebble Beach Pro-Am after testing positive for coronavirus. The news confirmed this evening by the PGA Tour. They say the European Ryder Cup captain will receive their full support during his period of isolation, but he's going to spend a couple of weeks on the sidelines, hopefully not too serious from Padraig's point of view. Elsewhere, Jack Conan could make a first international appearance since the 2019 Rugby World Cup this weekend. The Leinster back row has been drafted into the Ireland squad in anticipation of Peter O'Mahony's suspension, which has come to pass in the past half hour. O'Mahony has been banned for the next three games following the red card he received on Saturday in Cardiff. Meanwhile, Jonathan Sexton and James Ryan are undergoing the return to play protocols after suffering head injuries in that defeat to Wales. But forwards coach Simon Easterby is hopeful that both will be fine for Sunday's visit of France to the Aviva.
Obviously, if a stage has failed, they have to drop back a day, and then that obviously puts them under pressure. You know, our primary focus is their health and safety first and foremost. So if a player, which may well be the case at some stage this week, if a player feels like they can't complete the stage they're in, then they obviously have to drop back a stage, and that compromises their availability. But you know, we're aware of that, and we have plans in place to potentially have to deal with that if they come along, you know. But at the moment, that's what we're planning for, is that they get through each stage each day, and they get that one step further to making themselves available by the weekend.
There's a bit of a conversation brewing around Johnny Sexton, which he will love. He will really love. So it seems in France that Dr. Jean-Francois Sherman, he was the neurologist, it seems, who looked after Sexton in 2014. Remember, he stepped down for 12 weeks. Johnny Sexton stopped playing for 12 weeks on account of a few repeated knocks to the head. So it seems Dr. Jean-Francois has done an interview over in France and has given the opinion that he reckons Johnny Sexton across his career has had 30 concussions, which is obviously a colossal number. Now, I don't know what he's basing it on as such. I guess he did treat Johnny Sexton. But I know in 2018, for instance, Johnny Sexton was talking here on the 42 about his disappointment that he's always associated with concussion. And he said then, in 2018, I've been stuck with this stigma of concussion. This is on the back of those 12 weeks off. When probably I've only had two or three ever in my career. Like, I've had plenty of bangs in the head, but I've probably had two or three concussions. There's a hell of a difference there between two or three in Johnny Sexton's opinion and 30 in this doctor's opinion. But that's already becoming a big story. I see it's the most read story on the Irish Times sports section at the moment. So that is brewing in the background at the moment.
Can you answer something for me? Sorry. Yeah. Well, I think yeah, I think so. I think I don't want to talk generally specifically about the case because I think it's complicated.
Yeah.
But can you tell me, is there some difference between the Irish and Welsh protocols? Have I picked up something in response to the match on Saturday? Or the match on Sunday, sorry. Is it to do with the Ireland are playing later next weekend? Is that basically it? Is it to do with a week?
It would feed a lot into it, yeah, but definitely having an extra day to prepare for the game would alter how those return to play protocols are implicated, yeah.
Mm. Well, it looks like they're both on track to play anyway, so that's what's going on at the moment. Where are we going next, Rich?
France have made two alterations to their front row options, at least for Sunday's game at the Aviva. Ouini Antonio and Hassan Collingar replaced their fellow props Georges-Henri Colomb and Jean-Baptiste Gros. Two places up for grabs in the FA Cup sixth round tonight. Make that one. Bournemouth are through to the quarterfinals. Sam Sturridge and a junior Stanislas penalty have seen them beat Burnley by 2-0 at Turf Moor. Both Jimmy Dunn and Kevin Long started for the hosts tonight. There's a 7:30 start to tonight's other fifth round contest with Manchester United playing host to West Ham. Dean Henderson starts in goal for United. For West Ham, they've started with their main striking options on the bench, at least our front three, I should say, of Jarrod Bowen, Andrew Yarmolenko and Pablo Fornals, while the Tala teenager Mipo Odebeko is again on the bench for the Hammers. Kickoff in that one is at 7:30.
On Woods, can anyone name a top level, best in their field athlete who has come across as well adjusted and normal? I'm coming up empty here, says Fran in Galway. Wouldn't be too many. You wouldn't put Jordan in that category. You'd put Rory in. McIlroy as well adjusted and balanced, but you couldn't say he's dominated the way Jordan or Woods did.
Rory's reasonably, but he says the same. He says something 6 months ago, and then he says the exact opposite 6 months down the line.
Hardly has him in the dock the same way you would Michael Jordan or Tiger Woods.
No, he's a very good communicator.
Roger Federer, says Richie. Shout. That's as close as you'll get, I think. Yeah, that'll do it. I remember the shock when I found out that the Ultimate Warrior may have been on more than vitamin C and Baraka. Friends in school also disappointed, says Killian in Wexford. Tough day. Only Tiger Woods could win a major hopping around the course on one leg, says somebody. And Donald watched both episodes. His treatment of Stevie Williams, who was with him for over 10 years, and how he never spoke to him again. That said enough of the character to me. Yeah, Stevie Williams still hurt, Dan. Still, that's a sore wound for Stevie Williams, isn't it?
I didn't think Steve Williams was a particularly sympathetic figure, though, was he?
I don't think he'd be regarded as such, no.
No, that's right.
But it was cold-blooded on Woods' part all the same.
I assume everyone who contributed to the documentary is gone, though, aren't they?
Gone.
Even the O'Meara's and all of this,
the O'Meara's interesting. Because they were
the
great friends.
Sort of very unusual,
I think he still is pally enough with Mark O'Meara. They were certainly amazing friends. By the way, you were wondering, is it true to the book? Basically, the cast of characters you saw as the talking heads and the witnesses, they are exactly the same cast of characters in the book. So they've just copied and pasted. The only difference being Rachel Yucatel, I guess one of his main relationships outside of his marriage. So she had read the book, and then when she heard they were doing the documentary, she said, okay, look, I liked what you did in the book. I'm prepared to speak for the first time in the documentary. By the way, the press baiting of her as she was leaving her house and getting into her car and the things they were shouting to her. I mean, the press are far more despicable than Woods at his worst.
But it was also a different press as well. You look at the paparazzi scramble and stuff. Now it's just like camera phones. It was all when you think about it, that was one of the takeaways. It's one of the reasons I was able to get away for so long, wasn't it? You wouldn't have got away with it. Now it's the same.
Oh, sorry. I thought for a second you said there one of the reasons I was able to get away with it for so long. which is a hell of a revelation for 27 minutes past seven on this Tuesday evening, Dan. I thought I knew you.
Yeah, that'd be a frenzy around that, right?
There would. Richie, do you want to squeeze in a few more?
Yeah, Mike Dean will not referee a game in the Premier League this weekend after his request to stand down was granted. The top flight official made the request after receiving death threats in the wake of two controversial red card decisions at over the course of the last week. He will still be in charge, though, of tomorrow night's FA Cup fifth round meeting of Leicester and Brighton. While the trend of European ties being moved to neutral venues has continued today, Manchester United's Europa League last 32 first leg with Real Sociedad has been moved from the Basque country to Turin. Flights from the UK into Spain currently blocked. And it took Ashley Barty just 44 minutes to secure a place in the Australian Open second round today. The top seed beat Danka Kovacic 6-love, 6-love. Also today, defending champion Sofia Kenin, 5th seed Alina Svitolina, and the 6th seed Karolina Pliskova and Coco Gauff were all victorious, but 2-time finalist Victoria Azarenka was beaten in straight sets by the world number 61 Jessica Pegula. Also win today for the men's 2nd seed Rafa Nadal and the Russians Daniel Medvedev and Andrei Rublev.
Simon Zeebo playing with our emotions.
Yeah, he's been speaking to Rugby Rama in France, obviously about the upcoming Ireland-France game, but also touches on his future. He's in the final year of his contract and he says he's tempted by potentially playing for Ireland in the 2023 Rugby World Cup. He's in the final year of his current deal at Racing 92 and he's been in the international wilderness since announcing his move to France, but says a decision on his future will likely come next week. Watch this space.
Okay, very good. Competition this week. All week we're giving away a 300 euro Aldi voucher to celebrate Valentine's Day every evening. Love and lockdown obviously may be a little bit different this February 14th, but if you're planning to cook an award-winning steak, buy a bottle of bubbly or pick up the perfect bouquet of roses this week, you can drop into one of the 145 Aldi stores nationwide. To be in with a chance of winning that 300 euro voucher, just identify tonight's sports star. There's a Valentine theme here. So this jockey is synonymous with 40th wedding anniversaries. This jockey is synonymous with 40th wedding anniversaries. Dan, do you know that?
I'm probably taking this too literally and trying to think of a jockey. No, not at the moment. No.
Does he just send people cards? Is it like when you reach 100 and you get a letter from the president?
You need to start thinking about what the present is for your 40th. You know, the way year one is paper, year two is cotton. That's as long as I've been married, so that's all I know. But, you know, get up to 40. Text your name and answer to 53106 for 30 cents, and we'll announce the winner at the end of the show. It's all with thanks to Aldi. If you're planning on getting married later this year or next year, by the way, check out their Twitter channel. They're giving away 5,500 euro worth of flowers and wine in their Walking Up the Aisle competition. If you're wondering why we were talking Tiger Woods there, if you've just tuned in late to the news round, we're talking to the man behind the new documentary on Woods based on the book, which he wrote, Armin Katayan, with us after 8 o'clock. Up next, though, we're talking to Tara Sullivan about Tom Brady. Richie, thank you. Dan, thank you.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.